Let me just get started with a little bit of a homework review. But before, good morning, everyone. It is a good morning. But let's start with just kind of reviewing the home assignment I gave last week. I kind of rushed through, but how to be better givers. So is there anything anyone did between this week and last week? In preparation for this week's abounding offering? Yeah, that's good. Praying for, did I meet my expectations and did I go beyond that? Did anybody find the questions I had printed out helpful at all or not? I found them helpful. In hindsight, I just kind of read through them and I thought maybe they leaned more on, Am I giving enough more than, well, what do I have to give and why don't I have anything to give? I mean, I think your questions will differ depending on your situation, but the point is just to ask those questions. God, what do you want from, or what do you require, or how can I honor you with my wealth and what I have? Even if it's very little, how can I honor you? If anybody asks questions, I guess I'm not getting any feedback on that. Did anybody receive answers for any questions that they've been asking about specifically to be giving in this abounding offering? Okay. Ooh, I wish I had them with them. They were more like, I'm trying to recall them. It's like questions I would ask myself is God, is this... I'm stumped right now. I'm sorry for that. But I guess the exercise was to ask questions of God and to meet with your family and discuss giving this week and in preparing for the offering this week. I should have printed those out. Well, anyways, I think what we'll do is just get started now. I'll start with a prayer. Lord in heaven, I ask for my daily bread, and I ask that my debts be forgiven. Lord, why do I borrow? Is it because I think your provision isn't enough for me? Is it because I chase my own fantasies? Or is it because of this? Is it because of my weakness in suffering? And last, is it because you're not on the forefront of my mind? Lord, I have many plans in my heart, but to you belongs every one of my steps. Guard my steps, Lord. You are my strength in my weakness. You are my wise counsel when I'm amongst foolishness. You are my Lord, so take lordship over my heart. Amen. All right. Just to start off, can I take a quick poll? How many people here are self-employed? Just raise your hand. One person. Anybody self-employed that's coming in? So employees, everyone else is employees then? Okay. That's just for future reference for me. Do we have any seasonal employees in here at all? Anybody work seasonally? Nope. Just annual employees? Okay. I'll just take a note quick. Mike and Rich? Okay. Part-time self-employed. Alrighty. So, today we're going to be talking about debt, and debt has two sides. You're either a lender or a debtor. Today we'll talk specifically on the debtor side. The Bible has a lot to say about both. We'll stick with the debtor today and just focus in on that. So, we will first try to get a biblical understanding of debt and being a debtor, and then we'll apply our understanding to some of the debt that we have today, some of the common debt. So just to start off, I had this question. What is the world teaching us about debt nowadays? Bad advice is really damaging. You know, at my job at the IRS, we go after the advisors because we know they impact more people than just every other person. A bigger compliance impact, they call it, for going after the advisors, the bad advisors. So there's some really bad advice out there regarding debt, and you don't have to look very far to see it. Let me just give a few examples. The trouble with some of this advice is it's just so popular in popular culture. It's really blurred the lines of what makes sense and what doesn't. I think someone said once that if you lie loud enough, the world, you know, it becomes truth. Long enough and loud enough, it becomes truth. Let's look at some of the things that the world might have said about debt. So I have this from CNN Money. It says, "It's almost impossible to live debt-free. Most of us can't pay cash for our homes or our children's education, but too many of us have let debt go out of control." Or out of hand, it says. So what's being said here? Debt's pretty normal. Everyone has it. You can't get by without it. And look around, it seems pretty true. Everyone is in debt. That's what it's saying. And it's the problem isn't that you have debt. The problem is that you just let it go out of control. That's the problem. So let's look at a couple others. Good debt is obtained through making wise decisions about your future, not for the sole purpose of having good debt. For example, you might make the decision to obtain your master's degree to increase your earnings potential, taking out a student loan if you have no other way of financing your education is a valid reason for taking on additional debt. So what this is common, and they use this, or it's been used for many different types of debt, student debt. It's saying debt is good, only certain types. There's good debt and there's bad debt is the idea here. If you somehow use your debt to turn a profit for yourself, it's good. That's what's being said. One more. Taking out a mortgage to buy a home is usually considered good debt as well. Like student loans, home mortgages generally have lower interest rates than other debt. Plus, that interest is tax deductible. Even though mortgages are long-term loans, 30 years in many cases, those relatively low monthly payments allow you to keep the rest of your money free for investments and emergencies. The ideal situation would be that your home increases in market value over time enough to cancel out the interest you've paid over the same period. Kind of the same thing. Mortgages are okay debt is what's being taught. You can sell your house and recover the interest. And even in some cases, mortgages are said to be an investment, an earning investment. And that's pretty common in many financial, you'll hear this from financial advisors pretty regularly. So we can't really say what's good or bad or what's wrong without going into the Bible. We have no foundation without doing that. So that's what we're going to do. And I've come to believe a lot of these things in my life as well, but opening up my Bible, I can evaluate what's good and what's bad or what's right and what's wrong. So I'll do that. So what does the Bible first say about debt? You'll see on the handout it says first that the Bible advocates freedom. Bible advocates freedom. It doesn't say debt's wrong or not, you know, it doesn't say debt specifically, anything about debt is wrong or sinful. It advocates freedom. Let's look into how it does this. Proverbs 22:7 on the screen. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. So, looking back at some of those quotes from CNN Money, they say something that debt can do for you, but they ignore the risk and something that is true about debt. And this is something that's true about all debt. It's a very general statement. It's so general. It doesn't say the borrower of a credit card is a slave, but the borrower of a mortgage isn't. It's very general. The borrower is always a slave. It applies to any borrower, any lender. So I'll just ask this. Do you want to be a slave to Citibank or the mortgage company? I'm sure you don't. No one wants someone to master their life, except for God. We want God to be our master, right? So that's one of the perils of debt, the risks that the Bible just makes very clear. So the next section, Galatians 5:1 and 13. I'll just read these off the PowerPoint. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. You, my brothers and sisters, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge in the flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly in love. We're Christ's freedom fighters. He died for us for our freedom. It doesn't quite make sense to just go and shackle ourselves again. Does that really make sense? We should use our freedom for freedom. I just noticed another thing here about indulging in the flesh. There's a saying that indulging dulls the senses. I must be very dull, or my generation must be very dull then. We indulge ourselves all day long. It's a proverb that the wise will store up riches, whereas the fools will just gulp theirs down. So overindulgence, the moral of the proverb is that overindulgence will put shackles on us, will put the shackles of debt on us. It's really hard to define what overindulgence is in our life. It's a very hard thing. It's very subjective. And again, it's kind of a continual theme throughout my whole class. It's it's a heart issue. It involves going to God and saying, evaluating yourself. And just remember this about overindulgence, that Isaiah card. Is this food that feeds, is the question I would ask myself. So we know what the Bible says here. Let's go on to the next one. Or do I have any questions or anything just going off? Next, we'll go Romans 13:7-8. For this section, we'll just focus in on Romans 8, which says, "Owe nothing to anyone except love one another." So the theme here is don't owe anybody anything. So I think it's pretty, without going more in more depth, the Bible just warns this. Christ died for our freedom. Why are we going back to debt? We shouldn't be going to debt for our needs. So on the next point, well, what about the debt we already have and we've already accrued before either knowing this or just not thinking about this? What should we do about that? Well, it's pretty plain. Some people just dismiss it for being obvious. You pay it back. You pay what is owed. Pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed. Revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom respect is owed. Pay what is owed. It just is simple. I just think of this. A lot of times, taxing authorities and things like that get a bad rep for making you owe more than you actually do. And I'll just say, it's one of the things I always, in my job, I fall back to is Proverbs 8. It's the call to wisdom. God has appointed every government official in their place. And to me, as both a government official and a Christian, that's a very high standard for me. But I guess my point is, you owe taxes, you pay them. You owe debts, you pay them. Don't place your hope in some sort of bankruptcy or debt forgiveness. That should be an absolute last option. Again, in Psalm 37:21, the wicked, they borrow and they do not repay, but the righteous give generously. So pay your debts, it says. Okay, so in the last biblical point that we'll go through, it's Proverbs 6:6-8. So now that we know we shouldn't necessarily take out debt and we got to pay it back, what are we to do? Well, the Bible says you should work and save. It advocates this. I kind of like Proverbs 6:6-8 just because of the illustration it gives with an ant. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food for harvest. I thought it was funny because, you think about it. Well, the ant has a queen ant that it's accountable for, right? But I think what it's getting at is the ant's it's out of the hive. It's not really accountable to anyone. But it knows the season. It knows winter's coming. It gathers food, brings it back to the hive so that it'll survive. It doesn't go off and wander around and just eat all it sets its eyes on, it actually works and brings food back to the hive. It very well could. There's no queen ant accountable for it out when it's out and about. I don't know. I just like that. It's kind of a humor to me, but makes me smile. So we should work and save. So before you just go say, hey, Captain Obvious, pay your debts back, and yeah, that's all obvious. Duh, we should do that. We don't. So it needs to be said before we go talking about how to get out of debt and talk about forms of debt. So we shouldn't just carelessly live and take out debt and ask for God to bail us out. Okay. So, now we'll just cover this. Is there such thing as a good debt? There's many that say there is good debt. There's good debt, a mortgage. You don't have the cash to put in the money into a mortgage right away. Just get 30 years and then you can, a 30-year mortgage, and then you can, pay the other expenses. Is there a good debt? I don't think you would find anywhere in the Bible that says that's good or bad. Like I said, the truth is you're a slave to that debt. And there's a danger that you're a slave because you're a slave. You were bought by Christ. So by putting yourself under the yoke of someone else's slavery, you're taking yourself off of the freedom you've gotten from Christ. So let's look at some various types of debt and just kind of apply this to understand them. Credit cards. I just kind of put the definition of usury up. The action or practice of lending money at unreasonably high rates of interest. I'm not saying credit cards, I would think they fall under that definition, but just people use credit card debt still and pay 20% interest on things. Just never carry a credit card balance. The interest is so awful. Just don't do it. Never carry a credit card balance. Pay it off every month if you have a credit card. Never do it. It's a real danger to yourself. Credit card debt will grow. I'll drive that point home. Never carry a credit card balance. Never carry it over to the next month. It's a vicious cycle. You'll never, if you start that, it's a downward spiral into really deep debt that you can't get out of. So if you use credit cards, pay the balance off every month. If you pay only the minimum payment, if you actually run the numbers, it kind of seems like you'll never get out of debt. I won't go too deeply into any of these things, but if you have a credit card balance on your credit cards now, I suggest these steps. Go home when you go home today. Remove the credit cards from your wallet or your purse. Locate a scissors, step two. Cut all the credit cards into pieces. Don't use them anymore. If you have a balance, just don't put yourself into that. It's a terrible temptation to fall into. It's personally hard for me because I've seen many times people that got into this spiral of debt, and it all started with credit cards. I just want to make sure I'm clear on my steps. Step one, remove all the credit cards from your wallet or purse. Step two, locate a scissors. Step two, cut them all up into mini pieces. Don't get any more credit cards. If you need a card, use a debit card. Step five, pay the balance off as soon as possible. And we'll go into how you do that in the next section. And then step six, when you get it paid off, the best feeling is mailing back those credit card pieces back to that credit card company. It's like, here you go, I don't want it anymore. Or you just call them and cancel. But I like some of the terms on the credit card contracts because they actually say, if you want to cancel, mail back the pieces. So I don't know, that's just such a redeeming feeling to mail them back. Another thing about credit cards, just a warning, it causes you to spend more than you actually would with cash. I know this. I mean, you go to Target or whatever, and you have a plan, a list of exactly what you want to buy. But you see the sale or something else, and you're like, well, I don't have the cash with me, but I have a credit card. I can buy that. It's that temptation that you don't feel the sting from using a credit card. I think there's this famous McDonald's study where they just studied people who bought on cash versus people who bought on credit cards. And well, it was pretty plainly obvious that those who bought on credit card just bought more. I don't have that study or anything on this slide. You can look it up. It's probably pretty easy to get to. So proponents of credit cards say this, that will argue, well, you're foolish for making this choice. You can't live this day and age without a credit card. I personally have a credit card. I go through extra steps to keep myself accountable. I personally want to cut it up. I don't like it. But we still have one. But proponents of credit cards argue that there's a security that comes with a credit card. What they mean is, well, if you use a debit card, they could take money directly out of your bank. Sure, the bank will reimburse you, but you're without that money for a while. So I suggest this. If you have an account connected to a debit card, just put a small amount of money of what you plan to use on in there, and that will have the same security as you would as a credit card. You get the same rights and privileges as you would a credit card. Proponents of credit cards also would argue, well, the points. What about the points? I mean, it gives me a free something every year. The points aren't worth the interest you pay. You can get points from a debit card, so I don't think there's any real benefit to credit cards. So you're better off without them. Next point, payday loans. These are just predatory loans. Again, it's kind of fairly obvious. The world, both financial advisors and like a Christian advisor would be in agreement, both with credit cards and payday loans. Just look at the sign. It just looks crazy. It's quick, fast, friendly service, same day, no credit checks. It's everything quick and hasty and get your money fast. Just know this proverb. How much more will hasty feet miss the way? You can wait for your next paycheck if you're paid biweekly. There's nothing in this world that can't wait. What if the debtor, the creditor, is at your door knocking? They can wait. You can tell them, hey, I get paid next week. And they'll come back. Trust me, they'll come back. There's nothing that can't wait. Payday loans, it's just the interest and the fees are just outrageous. And then you start the spiral of, well, I used a payday loan for last paycheck. Now I need money again now. So what do? I go get another payday loan. It's another downward spiral. Just, I'm not going to dwell on these, but stay away from them. So next, investing on margin. Another really really just kind of dumb idea. Just look at this guy. He has a wedding ring. He's probably thinking, oh no, what am I going to tell my wife? We're not going to retire, wife. We're moving out of our house. We got to sell our cars. He probably doesn't have to say we're going to have to sell the kids in slavery, maybe in the Old Testament days, but that's investing on margin, what it'll do. What it means is this. You go to your broker or your brokerage firm, and they'll lend you money to invest. People get lured into this because numbers guys get lured into this because of the increased return you get from leveraging debt, right? So you borrow at 2% interest rate, and you get a 12% rate of return. So you get 10%. Makes sense. That's great. 10%, right? The trouble is they don't adjust their returns for risk. And there's a real risk called market risk. So when the market tanks, everybody's down. A lot of people suffer. And a lot of people, so not only have you lost your investment, you're in debt. People get in trouble with this. I would not recommend investing on margin. I guess the same kind of goes for any type of business investing. Right now I'm thinking about real estate. Think about 2008. You might know a lot of people that they invested really heavily in real estate. They take out mortgages and not pay any money down on their rental properties. And they do this, they leverage their debts as much as possible. And the market was awesome before that. It was fabricated. They were getting just ridiculous returns for their money. And they did that all the way up till the day of 2008, and then it plummeted, and they found themselves with far more debt than they can control. And there's so many bankruptcies. I don't have to dwell on this. It's just a recent event that, you know, the Bible warns us against. Don't do this. You're going to put yourself into debt, into slavery. There's a proverb that goes, money gathered little by little will grow. Well, if you're too hasty and you invest on margin, it won't grow. It'll dwindle away. So student loans. Maybe you can't read the sign. It's a little blurry. But it says, unemployed superhero. He's the master of degrees, and he's shackled by debt. A lot of people are in this situation. Again, this is almost like that in investing on margin. Remember what they said about what's good about student debt? You can increase your earnings potential. The trouble is they're not considering that risk that you won't get a job out of college or you'll be underemployed. I mean, what if you borrow $100,000 for your degree and then you get out of college and have a $40,000 a year job? It puts you in a really troubled situation. This is becoming a real problem, student debt. I mean, the cost of tuition is just rising to these ridiculous amounts. So just heed the Bible's warning. You're going to be a slave. Is your potential job worth being a slave? It's better to work and save for college. And I know you're probably thinking, hey, Captain Obvious, I mean, I don't have the money to work and save. But, you know, I guess I think this, that the college isn't going anywhere. I mean, you have time to work and save. For parents, start saving earlier. I won't dwell on this because tomorrow I'm going to talk more about the details of getting out of debt, and it's more of an overview of different types of debt. And I think another trouble with student debt is, like me, just take me, for example. I didn't know what I was going to want to do when I was out of high school. What am I going to do? Everybody's going to college, right? So I feel kind of left out. So I go to college. I start a degree in biology and physics and chemistry. I'm good at science. That's not what I want to do. And that put me in a bad situation where I had student debt. So it's a real danger, student debt is. We really just have to remember this. We're going to have to pay it back. It's a trap for a person just to say, I'm going to pay it off. Because when you sign for your student debt, you're promising to pay it. You make a promise to pay it back. And if you go back on that, well, you went back on your promise. That's why I personally dislike a lot of these. There's these student loan forgiveness programs. I mean, it's telling everyone that, hey, you can rack up this debt and get it forgiven. But another thing about those programs, even considering the moral part of it, they're usually too good to be true, and you won't qualify for them. So before you think, hey, I'm going to get this forgiven, look into them really carefully, and you'll see there's a lot of things that will make it so you don't qualify. So, let's go to mortgages. I just had some figures I ran, because I just kind of for example's sake. Mortgages, you know, when I say mortgage debt, you're a slave. Everybody, a lot of people have mortgages. I have a mortgage. I don't like it, and I'm going to work very hard to get out of it. But let me just show you some truth about mortgage. So if you have a $150,000 mortgage at a 5% fixed rate, right now you'll probably get a better than 5% fixed rate, but we'll just use it for example's sake. The 30-year mortgage is the most common that people have. You pay $648,292 for the principal and the interest. It's 4.3 times. So, yeah, a mortgage is okay, as long as you are okay with paying four times your house value. So what are the arguments against that? Well, you get a tax benefit for it, right? A tax benefit. What about the tax benefit? Well, let's consider that. You get $548,633. I adjusted it for an estimated tax savings, or 3.6 times. You still pay a lot more. A 30-year mortgage is not that great of a deal. I think there's a reason why in the Old Testament you see that debts are forgiven after 7 years. Being in debt for 30 years is very hard, and and your money will never grow. Another thing you might just say is, well, I guess before I do that, I also have up here the 15-year mortgage. You pay two times, not quite as bad. It's still twice the price you'd pay just for paying cash. So I'm sure you're thinking this. Well, what is my options here? It's either buy a house or lease, right? And with leasing, I'm just throwing all my money away. That's the common argument. I guess, and then also in that argument, I'll just keep going with it. The principal you apply is saved, and it'll grow because the home value will grow, right? And that's why people have come to say a home is an investment. It's an investment because it grows. So, Where I disagree with that is with the home, you have to pay repairs and maintenance. So if you pay interest and repairs and maintenance, I think if you run the numbers, you'll find that the home growth won't be as much as that. The option to rent will enable you to save for a mortgage. So because you don't have that repairs and maintenance. Let me just give you an example of kind of repairs and maintenance. And I know a lot of us are homeowners here. But just for Katie and me, last year we just totaled it up. It was a bad year for us. We paid 8% of our home value in repairs and maintenance. 8%, that's a lot. So I can't look at my house and say it's an investment. It's a dwelling, it's a place I live, and that's what it is. So I use that in my judgment of buying a home. I'm not going to buy the most costly home. I'm going to buy whatever fits my needs. And then looking at the mortgages, try to get for the 15-year. Try to pay full cash. Because that 30-year mortgage, you'll never, just the interest is just ridiculous. I got to keep piling on the mortgage. I mean, there's other things like real estate taxes and insurance. I mean, it's not an investment. Let's just know that truth. It's not an investment, so it's not worth going into slavery for. When you're making a decision to buy a home and you have to use a mortgage, I can't tell you it's wrong. I just tell you this, because I do it too. Just make that decision like I'm not going to get as much house as I possibly can. Or the option to rent. It's not as bad as it would seem. I guess I should quick mention FHA loans. The FHA loans, you would pay a PMI, private mortgage insurance. It's just like an additional interest. It's better just to get a conventional loan. A conventional loan, you don't have that. You just have to save for a down payment. It's the better option. I don't like PMI. It's more interest. Okay, I'll keep going on. So another one. Home equity loans and lines of credit. So I say your home isn't an investment. It's a dwelling and a place to live. Your home isn't a piggy bank. You shouldn't be drawing money from it. The goal is to get out of debt, debt-free. People who borrow, I've just seen a lot of people borrow from their home, and their argument is this. If I borrow from my home, I can remodel, and by remodeling, I'll raise the value of my home and it'll pay itself off. Again, you got to be aware of the risks. You risk, well, can you really afford that monthly payment? What if your income situation changes? And then next, that interest that you're paying eats away at that additional value you will get. And a lot of times, look at I had a bathroom remodel done last year. I'm not going to get the full amount of money back for my bathroom remodel. The market won't cover that. So I wouldn't recommend any home equity loans. I'm totally against them because they're just such a big risk. The Bible says the best alternative is working and saving for what we have. Okay, last one. Car loans. That's my personal weakness is cars, so I got to watch myself. I just have a fascination with cars. So These loans are they're easy to get enticed by. 0% interest or 1% interest. I think we should just stop and think about that. So there's a business whose motivation for doing business is to earn money so they can earn a living. Why would they lend money at 0% or 1%? What's in it for them? Let me assure you this. They're not going to do it if they're not covered. What they do is they just build it into the purchase price. When you get a dealer loan that's 0% or 1%, that's what it is. You're paying more for the car than you actually should. There's a saying that cash is king. It's the best negotiator. The best thing to do is to buy your cars with cash. Again, it's always goes back to this problem. Can I really afford those monthly payments? You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So that's what you consider before you go into debt. So I went through everything kind of quickly because I want to leave room for discussion. In conclusion, Christ has set us free. So let's not just go back into slavery by shackling ourselves with debt. Let's avoid debt, pay back the debts we have, become debt-free, work and save money for our purchases. I was thinking of this. At the Last Supper, Christ said this. He said, "When you were with me, were you ever without need? Did you ever need anything?" And everybody was like, "No, we didn't need anything." "Well, now that I'm gone, take your cloak, your purse, and your sword." Your reality is this: we do have to work we do need to do business. Christ isn't with us. What debt does is it prevents us from eagerly awaiting Christ. So for the home activity, and then we're going to kind of get into open discussion if you have questions. Do this. If you have debt, the people who have debt, you have an assignment. The people who don't, you get a lucky break this week. Gather some information this week. Get these things. So the name of your creditors, the outstanding balance of any loans, the minimum payment, and the interest rate. And I'll tell you what to do with those next week. Next week, we'll be talking about how to get out of debt. And also, we'll be talking if time permits, we'll talk about debt from the lender's perspective, because I understand there's probably lenders in this room too. So why don't I just open it up for questions or concerns or anything?